Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Job chapter 28. We will cover the entire chapter, verses 1 through 28. We'll call this chapter Job Continues. Where is wisdom? Job is talking about where is wisdom because he cannot understand why he is being punished so severely, he thinks, for something he didn't do. And so he's talking about human beings do not have wisdom. And so he is continuing his search for wisdom. We start now in Job 28, verses 1 through 4. Surely there is a mine for silver and a place where gold is refined, Job says. Iron is taken from the ground, and copper is smelted from ore. A miner puts an end to the darkness. He probes the deepest recesses for ore in the gloomy darkness. He cuts a shaft far from human habitation in places unknown to those who walk above ground. Suspended far away from people, the miners swing back and forth. Now, what's Job's point in talking about mining in these four verses? As the NIV Study Bible explains it, quote, though it is extremely difficult to mine iron or copper, humans have managed it, but it is much harder to mine wisdom and understanding. Only God can do that. So basically, again, it's the typical a fortiori argument that is used so often in Job and elsewhere in the Old Testament. Human beings are quite capable for looking for all kinds of valuable stuff below ground, and it's real difficult to do it, and they manage to do it. Well, how much more can God find wisdom? If man is strong enough to mine underground and find all kinds of valuable minerals, how much more can God find wisdom and understanding? Here's what Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says about Job's efforts here. Quote, in the 27th chapter, Job had tacitly admitted, that's the last chapter, Job had tacitly admitted that the statement of the friends was often true, that God vindicated his justice by punishing the wicked here. But still, the affliction of the godly remained unexplained. Man has, by skill, brought the precious metals from their concealment, but the divine wisdom which governs human affairs, he cannot similarly discover. In other words, man can mine, but he can't understand God's wisdom. However, the image from the same metals, referring to Job 23:10, which I'll read for you in a minute, the image from the same metals implies Job has made some way towards solving the riddle of his life, namely, that affliction to him as the refining fire is to gold. Job said that in Job 23, five chapters previously, where Job said this, yet he, God, knows the way I have taken. When he has tested me, I will emerge as pure gold. So Job is starting to realize that God is testing him. He doesn't understand that God is using Satan to do the job, but he's coming up with the idea that God is testing him. He has never denied God's justice. He's never denied that God, in general, punishes the wicked, just not all the time. But that's just general knowledge about God. Everybody knows that. But now Job is talking about something a little more difficult. How do we understand suffering? Suffering that has not really been deserved by the sufferer. Now, Adam Clark makes a comment about these four verses, or this chapter, actually, that is a little bit off the point, but I'll read it. He says this, quote, this chapter is the oldest and finest piece of natural history in the world and gives us very important information on several curious subjects. And could we ascertain the precise meaning of all the original words, we might, most probably, find out allusions to several useful arts which we are apt to think are of modern or comparatively modern invention. Now, Clark has pointed out something here. It is amazing to me when you read the Old Testament, or all ancient history, not just the Old Testament. Those people were not dumb bunnies. They had law. I've looked at some of these ancient 2 or 3,000 B.C. law codes in the ancient Near East. I'm amazed. There's bailment, there's criminal law, there's conversion, there's all kinds of stuff, torts, all kinds of stuff that we have in modern law. And not to mention, they also know how to mine, they have technology and such. They weren't dumb bunnies. But that's off our main topic here. Verse 3 says, Job says, a miner puts an end to the darkness. That means he brings light into a mine, either by letting the sun in or by carrying a lamp in. Miner puts an end to the darkness. He probes the deepest recesses for ore in the gloomy darkness. He's working hard to find that iron. He's got to work even harder to find wisdom, because wisdom's harder to find than minerals under the ground. Verse 4, he, the miner, cuts a shaft far from human habitation in places unknown to those who walk above the ground. That's because people walking on the ground don't realize there's a mine under them. Suspended far away from people, the miner swing back and forth. suspended either from cages or from ropes, as the Cambridge commentator says, or from ropes, as the pulpit commentator says, probably ropes. And they swing back and forth as they tie the rope around their waist, I would think, and they hang the rope. They fasten the rope to the ceiling of the mine, and then they swing from the ropes down below into the shaft so they can do their work. And they swing back and forth as they do that. We go now to Job 28, verses 5 through 8. Job continues, "The earth, from it comes food, and underneath it is turned up as fire. Its rocks are the source of sapphires, and its dust contains gold. The path no bird of prey knows, nor has the falcon's eye caught sight of it. The proud beast have not trodden it, nor has the fierce lion passed over it." Now, we're going to go through a lot of scriptures here talking about how tough it is to mine precious rocks. And the whole point is, even as it's hard to mine precious rocks, it's also hard to get understanding and wisdom from God. It's hard to understand what God's about. Verse 5, "The earth, from it comes food," of course, because plants grow on the earth, "and underneath it," underneath the earth, "it is turned up as fire." That's not very clear what that means. The NIV has it, "The earth, from which food comes, is transformed below as by fire." So we're still talking about what happens under the earth. Here's some options as what this means. Underneath the earth is turned up as fire. It could mean that putting fire on rocks burns out the ore and gets sapphires and gold. In other words, you get gold or you heat it. You heat it up in fire and out comes the gold. Pulpit commentary says this, quote, "Fire was used in some of the processes whereby masses of material were detached and forced to yield their treasures." That makes sense to me, although it's expressed a little bit strangely. Underneath, the earth is turned up as fire. John Gill suggests it might be coal turned up from the earth and used to make fire. Underneath, the coal is turned up or turned out, mined, if you will, from the mine, and it's coal when it comes out, but it turns out being fire when it's burnt, so it's turned up as fire. That's a little bit of a stretch. Or he might not be referring to coal. He might be referring to the sapphires and the gold that are mentioned in verse 6, and they could glow like fire. They look like they're burning when they're not because they're just glowing. Or it could be referring to coals or brimstone sulfur that actually burns. Not sure what it means, but I'm sure it's talking about something underneath the ground. I'm just going to assume it's ore that's burnt by fire, such as gold ore. You have to melt it. Now in verse 6, "Its rocks are the source of sapphires." Now there's some semi-precious stones mentioned here, and I've made a vow to myself whenever I encounter semi-precious stones in the Bible, I just look at the pictures and I don't try to explain them because nobody knows how to translate them. Nobody knows how they look now. A sapphire back in the ancient days might not be the same thing as a sapphire in modern times. So roughly we can say the sapphires are transparent blue. Then NIV notes sometimes translates it as lapis lazuli, which is a transparent blue. Adam Clark says it's an opaque blue, not transparent. An opaque blue with gold spots, who knows? But at any rate, under the ground, where all the sapphires are and all the gold is a path that no bird of prey knows. In other words, the mine courses underground, but the birds upstairs, the eagles and the vultures, they don't see where the mine is because this mine is hidden. And again, the idea is just like the mine is hidden and just like the precious stones are hidden, so is God's precious wisdom and knowledge also hidden from people who don't understand what's there. "Nor has the falcon's eye caught sight of it." The falcon flies above the ground. He can't see what's going on under the ground, just like Job can't see what's going on in the mind of God. Verse 8, "The proud beast have not trodden it, nor has the fierce lion passed over it." In other words, when a lion walks on top of the earth, he doesn't realize there's a whole network, a whole labyrinth, if you will, of mine shafts under the ground. So the proud lion is ignorant of what's down there, just like Job is ignorant of God's wisdom. We go now to Job 28, verses 9 through 11. "The miner strikes the flint and transforms the mountains at their foundations. He cuts out channels in the rocks, and his eyes spot every treasure. He dams up the streams from flowing so that he may bring to light what is hidden." In verse 9, "The miner strikes the flint," Job says. The flint is the hard rock the miner is digging through, as John Gill states. So the miner strikes the flint, and he transforms the mountains at their foundation. The NIV translates it this way, "The miner lays bare the roots of the mountains." Basically what that means is they dig holes out from the bottom of the mountains in order to sink their mine shafts. He cuts out channels in the rocks. The NIV says he searches the sources of the rivers. There is an NIV note that says the Septuagint, the Vulgate, and the Hebrew says he dams us in the rocks, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So we're going to take he cuts out channels in the rocks. Adam Clark says that means that the miner prevents underground waters from drowning the mine. In other words, the miner, by cutting out channels in the rocks, he leads the waters away from the mine. Verse 11, it says, Job says, that he, the miner, dams up the streams from flowing so that the miner may bring to light what is hidden. So that does give the idea the water is shunted away out of danger to keep the miners out of danger. So basically, Job is describing the underground work of miners. Again, talking about how hard it is. And again, his point is, as hard as it is to get gold and sapphire and topaz and precious stones out from under the ground, yeah, it's very hard, but it doesn't compare to how hard it is to get the wisdom of God from the mind of God. We go now to Job 28, verses 12 through 15. But where can wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? Man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. The deep says it is not in me, and the sea says it is not with me. Pure gold cannot be given in exchange for it, nor can silver be weighed as its price. Now Job's going to turn to how hard it is to find wisdom. Where is it? Can't find it. It's as hard as it is to find gold and silver underground. As hard as that is, wisdom is even harder to find. It's not found in the land of living. In verse 13, wisdom is not found in the land of the living. In other words, all living souls do not have wisdom. Nobody has it. Now that it could be the value or the price of wisdom can't be found in the land of living, which means that no living person has the money with which they can buy wisdom, which is the same thing as saying there's no wisdom here in the land of the living. In verse 14, Job says, the deep says it is not in me. Wisdom is not in me. Well, that could be the deep parts of the earth, the mines, as John Gill says, or it could be the ocean, which would, of course, be parallel with the sea in verse 14. The deep says it's not in me, and the sea says it's not with me. I think it's parallel. I think he's talking about it. You can't go into the deepest parts of the waters of the earth. You can go down there, but you're not going to find wisdom. Verse 15, pure gold cannot be given in exchange for wisdom, nor can silver be weighed as its price. Silver and gold are not going to buy wisdom. Verses 16 through 19, Job 28, wisdom cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir, in precious onyx or sapphire. Gold and glass do not compare with it, and articles of fine gold cannot be exchanged for it. Coral and quartz are not worth mentioning. The price of wisdom is beyond pearls. Topaz from Cush cannot compare with it, and it cannot be valued in pure gold. Now, Ophir is somewhere in Arabia, I think. Nobody really knows where it is, but it seems to be a common opinion. But it was famous for gold, because often you hear the phrase, the gold of Ophir. But even if you have gold from Ophir, you cannot buy wisdom with it. Too expensive. You can't value wisdom in terms of onyx or sapphire. Onyx, of course, is a solid black rock. Sapphire is a bright blue rock. Can't buy wisdom with that. Can't buy wisdom with gold. Can't buy wisdom with glass or crystal. Articles of fine gold, not only raw gold, but gold that's been hammered into fine furniture or utensils or jewelry or whatever, you can't buy wisdom with that either. Coral and quartz, not even worth talking about as you try to come up with a price for wisdom. The price of wisdom is beyond pearls. Pearls aren't good enough for wisdom. Topaz from Cush, another precious mineral. I wish you could see my beautiful pictures here. I got off the internet all these images of these precious rocks. You can't, but I'm looking at them right now, and they are bright and beautiful and shiny and worthless when it comes to buying wisdom. We go now to Job 28, verses 20 through 24. Where then does wisdom come from, and where is the place of understanding? Thus it is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the sky. Abaddon and death say with thy ears, we've heard a report of it. God understands its way, and he knows its place, for he looks to the ends of the earth and sees everything under the heavens. So once again, Job talks about how hard it is to find wisdom. Hidden from the eyes of all the living. So that means everybody on earth can look for it, but they're not going to find it. Concealed from the birds of the sky, even if you have the vantage point, a spot way up in the sky so you can see everything, you're still not going to see wisdom. Or maybe you can go low instead of being way up in the sky where the birds of the sky are. You could go deep down under the earth in the place of Abaddon, the destroyer, and death, the grave, under the ground. You're not going to find it there either. There's just been a report of wisdom down here. Heard about it back in the war of 44, back maybe 100 years ago, somebody came through here and said something they knew about wisdom, but hadn't heard much of it. Nobody can find it. When Job says that wisdom is concealed from the birds of the sky, he might have been referring to the gift of divination, which gift was assigned by the heathen, especially to birds. Their rapid flight heavenwards and their keen sight originated the superstition. Job may allude to that superstition, that birds way up in the sky, they see everything, so they know everything. Nope, no they don't. They can't find wisdom. Abaddon, of course, means destruction or the destroyer, translated that way in the NIV and the KJV. It's referring to the dead who live in the pit of destruction, the grave, contrasted with all the living things above. So the living people above and the dead people below the earth, nobody can find wisdom. Underground, Abaddon and death say, that means people who are dead, say, with our ears we have heard a report of it. The NIV translates that as, only a rumor of it has reached our ears. Yeah, we've heard something about wisdom. Well, now, who has knowledge of wisdom? Verse 23, Job says, God understands its way. God understands the way of wisdom, and God knows the place of wisdom. For God looks to the ends of the earth and sees everything under the heavens. So Job finally comes forth, which is basically a truism, that only God has wisdom. So he doesn't question the justice of God. He doesn't question the wisdom of God. He doesn't question the love of God. He doesn't question anything about God that we all assume to be true about God. So we go now to Job 28, verses 25 through 28. And now remember, he does question as to why he's not getting his case heard in God's heavenly courtroom. He is questioning why God is allowing all this nasty stuff to happen to him. So starting in verse 25 through 28, when God, Job continues, when God fixed the weight of the wind and limited the water by measure, when he established a limit for the rain and path for the lightning, he considered wisdom and evaluated it. Ah, so now God knows about wisdom. When did he do it? When he fixed the weight of the wind, or as the NIV says, when he established the force of the wind. In other words, when God made the wind, which is way beyond human understanding, is when God made the wind, and when he limited the water by measure, or as the NIV puts it, when he measured out the waters, as Gill puts it, God determined where the seas and rivers should flow. When God determined where the seas and waters should flow, as he measures the water by measure, well, that was at creation. That's when God created wisdom. When God established a limit for the rain and a path for the lightning, in other words, when it would rain here and not rain here, and a path for the lightning. Lightning, of course, zigzags through the air. The sound follows behind it. So all of this creative stuff, this nature stuff, is quite miraculous to us as we watch it. God did all that. And when he did that, verse 27, he considered wisdom and evaluated it. The NIV says, he looked at wisdom and appraised it. He confirmed it and tested it. So when God created the natural world, that's when he created wisdom. He established wisdom and examined it. He said to mankind in verse 28, now, when does God say this to mankind? Quote, the fear of the Lord is this, wisdom, and to turn from evil is understanding. Well, when did God tell man that the fear of the Lord is wisdom and to turn from evil is understanding? I don't really know. John Gill says that it occurred when God was instructing Adam after the fall. There's evil in the world now, Adam, because of the fall, so you need to turn away from it. I don't know. I think most probably it's just in general, I mean, through the natural conscience, God can speak to mankind and say, turn from evil. I mean, even pagans know you're not supposed to kill people, not supposed to rape your sister-in-law and that kind of thing. So basically, Job says, hey, God knows what wisdom is, and wisdom is to turn from evil, but he's still not going to say that he did any evil to deserve all this calamity that he was suffering. So it's hard for man to find wisdom, to summarize this chapter. However, God created wisdom, and he told mankind, hey, this is wisdom, fear the Lord. But somehow people don't fear the Lord, do they? Seems hard. It should be easy, but because of mankind's fallen state, because he suppresses the truth in unrighteousness, as Paul says in Romans 1, because mankind does that, he can't find wisdom. But Job knows that there's wisdom that's there. It's divine wisdom. He's just got to find it, and he knows it's going to be hard to find. He can't figure out why he's suffering so much, so there's something really heavy going on here. Just like it's hard for the miner to get gold and sapphire and precious stones out of mines, it's hard to find the mind of God in this problem of suffering. And so he's still at sea. He's still not satisfied in his quest to know what's going on. And so we are now ready to go to Job 29, verses 1 through 25. and we will look at Job's summary defense, his defense against his three accusatory friends who accused him of being a sinner, of doing something evil to bring all this evil on Job's head. And Job says, no, I didn't do anything, and I'm going to defend myself right now in Job chapter 29. So I hope you stay tuned for Job's defense, and I hope you enjoy this audio.